From Katanning to Jeffersonville, Beaver Falls to Ephrata, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, what is it like being a black Republican in the city of Philadelphia? Calvin Tucker gives us a glimpse in his new book, Requiem of a Contrarian, a Black Republican in the Urban Jungle. He is here to discuss. The city of Pittsburgh is struggling financially, as new data released by the city controller reveals. Eric Montardi and Alex Sodini have details on this week's Allegheny Institute report. And prevailing wage raises the cost to taxpayers of every government project. Now State House Democrats want to expand it. Emily Green from Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania talks about it on this week's Lincoln Radio Journal Commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to Calvin Tucker in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. Pennsylvania motorists pay the third highest gas tax in the nation at 58.7 cents per gallon, trailing only California and Illinois. Despite the high tax, the state's roadways remain in poor shape. According to data compiled by the Nonprofit Tax Foundation, even left-leaning New York has a lower gas tax at just under 25 cents per gallon. New Jersey and Maryland have higher gas taxes than New York, but still tax less than Pennsylvania. Despite this, Pennsylvania ranks 41st in the nation for road quality, according to a recent report compiled by U.S. News and World Report. The state ranks 45th in bridge quality. We're 47th overall in transportation. The recent arson attack on the Pennsylvania governor's residence was successful despite the investment of over $600,000 in security upgrades over the past 3 years. The arsonist set fire to the structure while Governor Josh Shapiro and his family were sleeping in a nearby section. A Harrisburg man has admitted to the crime, amid indications the attack was motivated by the perpetrator's anti-Semitic beliefs. Since the attack, an independent security evaluation has taken place and further security upgrades are planned. Meanwhile, a preliminary hearing for the suspect has been delayed until August. A cyber scam has resulted in the loss of over $700,000 to the City of Philadelphia School District. The Philadelphia Inquirer reports that on four separate occasions in the 2023-2024 school year, the district made electronic payments to people posing as vendors they were not. That included a $563,000 payment to a scammer claiming to restore flood damage to one of the district's buildings, and another $126,000 supposedly to provide educational services to students with disabilities. The money has not been recovered. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. Calvin Tucker has had a long career in both business and politics, serving at the highest levels of the Pennsylvania Republican Party. But being a black Republican in the heavily Democratic city of Philadelphia presented unique challenges, which Tucker chronicles in his new book, Requiem of a Contrarian, a Black Republican in the Urban Jungle. He joins us now to discuss the book. Calvin, welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. Calvin, before we get into the specifics of your new book, I think it's very interesting as a black Republican in the city of Philadelphia. Of course, with President Trump in the past election, we saw a growing number of African-American voters, other minorities, Hispanics, et cetera, migrating to the Republican side of the fold. But when you began, that certainly wasn't the case. So how did you even begin to get involved in Republican politics in the city of Philadelphia?
Almost five decades ago, when I was first registering my party affiliation, my mother was a staunch Republican. My family were staunch Republicans. She had leadership from ward leaders that were staunch Republicans, and they took me under their wings at that time and kind of showed me the rope. But they also said, you know, look at the environment in which we live in. And back then, I didn't equate it to being a contrarian. I didn't realize that the status quo were Democrats up to that point after 1952, when the Republicans controlled the city of Philadelphia. But as I looked at it, and then as I look in retrospect, I was a contrarian then because I was railing against the status quo to help our community. And that was kind of how my first indoctrination into the Republican Party, into politics in general, and Republican Party specifically. And it all started my immediate family.
How, as you grew up, as you became an adult and moved through your life, which has now spanned a number of decades, Kelvin, why is it you've stuck with the Republican Party? So you had a family background that got you there, but you not only stayed but became a leader in the effort. Why is that?
I looked at the values that the Republican Party offered, and their values aligned with the values that I grew up with, and they aligned with the values of the black community, even though the black community is not aware to a great extent of what the Republican Party has to offer. And so my mission in life was to work with the party and the community to bring an option, an alternative. Because when you look at what the Democrat Party has done, and certainly now it's over 70 years of control of the city of Philadelphia, and then my five decades, things have gotten markedly worse in the black community and in general the minority community. And so how do you change that? How do you affect change? And so through the Republican Party, I've been able to help manipulate and maneuver results in the community. And as you rightfully pointed out, that from 2016 to now, we have had a precipitous increase in the black vote for the Republican Party, because the Republican Party is doing what it has to do to attract that umbrella of minority individuals into the party. So that's kind of why I stuck to it, because I think that there's some value, and that value either is an option or alternative, or the value comes from the fact that they have strong leadership. And certainly when President Trump or candidate Trump became the president, he further exemplified the values particularly needed in the African American community or the black community.
I would imagine, since conservatives in general tend to have to deal with a lot of attacks, personal attacks as well as political attacks, harassment, being first of all a Republican in a heavily Democrat city, that had to be even more difficult. Being a black Republican in a heavily Democrat city had to make it even more difficult. What sort of challenges did you face? Did you face attacks and discrimination as a result of your affiliation?
Oh, absolutely. But you take those on as opportunities. As I present what the Republican Party, what conservatives offer to communities, right? Then they start to look at those as options, right? And so I turn those challenges into opportunities. And yes, there's some hits along the way. And in 2016, as you may know, I was one of the media surrogates for candidate Donald Trump. I spoke to about 75 interviews around the country, in the city, as well as the state. And I talked about what the black community needs, which they already knew, to overcome, you know, the economic morass and other issues, and that Donald Trump was the person that was going to bring economic sanity to our community, and no one believed it until they saw it in 2017, 18, 19, and then right before the Chinese communist pandemic in 2020. So I've turned aggressors into supporters. And the party, as long as it continues along the lines of working and embracing and engaging I think they're going to continue to achieve success within every community, including the Black community.
We are talking with Kelvin Tucker, who is author of the book Requiem of a Contrarian, a Black Republican in the Urban Jungle. And Kelvin, tell us a little bit about the book. What is the main theme of it? What points are you trying to get across?
Well, one, I just wanted to, give an unapologetic reflection of nearly five decades navigating the urban political landscape as a Black Republican. It hasn't been easy, but again, as I noted before, there are opportunities out there. And as long as I can produce results in the Black community from the Republican Party as an alternative party, then I believe there's continued value, and it's going to be very important as we move into 2026 and 2028 and trying to reelect Congress and reelect or elect a new president. So we need to continue engagement in all communities, including the Black community.
In your book, as you look back over some of the sort of the pivot points of your career as a Republican leader, what stands out? Does something like the Reagan Revolution stand out? Some of the riots that we sustained in 2020, what stands out as particular points of interest for you in your career?
Yeah, well, all of those things shaped my thinking about politics, about the geo-local political environment in which we live, as you indicated, the riots, the crack and cocaine epidemic in the city of Philadelphia, the MOVE bombings that not only shook Philadelphia and the Commonwealth, but it shook the nation, that a city would bomb or destroy 61 houses in an urban area and kill 11 kids. That's traumatic to a nation, to a city, to a people. And so, we have to rectify those things on a local basis. And that, I'm living through that because that was less than probably 5 miles from where I live.
Kelvin, not only were you a leader in Philadelphia, but you also moved up the ranks of the state Republican Party. How did you come to be a statewide leader in the party?
That's an interesting proposition. I guess I exemplified leadership throughout my tenure in this party. And when 2017 rolled around and a friend of mine, the former chairman, was rising through the ranks as well as a general counsel and seeking the chairmanship of the party, I think I kind of bucked the trend, and certainly in my county, Philadelphia County, and I supported him because we had a long relationship, a 40-some-year relationship, and I thought he had the leadership to move this party above. And what we did, we teamed up, and he said, look, I want you as part of my team because I know you have leadership. I know that you can engage and have been engaging with millennials and in the Black community and the Hispanic and Asian community and women. And so I want you to be part of that process. And that's kind of how I ended up as the deputy chair of the state party and chairman of the Engagement and Advancement Council across the state. And in fact, I traveled over 20,000 miles around this Commonwealth, looping about 34 counties out of 67 counties, talking to women and millennials and the other affinity groups, African American, Latino, and Hispanic, extolling the virtues of the Republican Party, and for those that non-traditional Republicans looking at the party as an alternative, as a way to drive more support for communities. And I've done that, obviously, in Philadelphia, but, as I travel to smaller counties, mid-sized counties across this Commonwealth, and I learned from them as they learned from me. And not only that, they had an opportunity to see, in some counties may not have a significant number of African Americans or other minority populations. And so they see a Black Republican, and I'm extolling the virtues of the Republican Party. And look, I mean, we have challenges and sometimes we have differences, but we must come together around a certain set of principles. And I think that's That's what my leadership has taught me and led me.
Calvin Tucker, author of the book Requiem of a Contrarian, a Black Republican in the Urban Jungle, longtime Republican activist in the city of Philadelphia and across Penn's Woods. Calvin, where can folks find your book if they want to get a copy?
Well, the book is being distributed through Amazon, so you can go to www.amazon.com. If you go to www.amazon.com, in the search engine, you put my name in, Calvin R. Tucker, the book will come up, and you can buy it in three different formats, a Kindle format, you can read online, or you get a paperback or a hard copy. Or you can go to my website, my personal website, www.calvinrtucker.com.
Calvin Tucker. Calvin, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you very much.
Stagnant tax revenue and continued high spending have placed a strain on the city of Pittsburgh's finances. Eric Montardi and Alex Sodini take a deep dive into the numbers on this Allegheny Institute report.
Hello, and welcome to the Allegheny Institute Report on the Lincoln Institute Radio Journal. I'm Eric Montardi. Joining me today is Research Associate at the Allegheny Institute, Alex Sedini. Alex, how are you today?
I'm doing great, Eric. Thank you for having me.
The City of Pittsburgh Comptroller recently released the 2024 Annual Comprehensive Financial Report, which details the City of Pittsburgh's financial performance in 2024. Alex, can you give our listeners an idea of some of the highlights of that report?
Looking at the statement of revenues, expenditures, and changes in fund balance on a budgetary basis for the general fund, which encompasses the city's core functions like public safety, public works, etc., we can get a picture of how the city performed and then how it compares to the 2024 budget. Revenues totaled $703.6 million and expenditures totaled $699.7 million, which means the city ran a general fund surplus of about $4 million. Compared to the budgeted amounts, revenues were about $10.6 million lower than the budgeted amount, while expenditures were about $20.8 million lower. And then, according to the controller, the city ended with about $200 million in its unassigned general fund balance, which is essentially its rainy day fund.
Alex, the city raises revenues from a lot of different sources, and in 2024, those sources went in some different directions. Can you give our listeners an idea of how some of the larger tax sources that the city of Pittsburgh collects performed in 2024?
The general fund revenues are comprised of primarily taxes, but then also licenses, fees, and then some state and federal sources. Taxes account for most of the revenue brought in at about $528 million, which was $13.5 million less than the budgeted amount. Property taxes were the highest source of revenue at $143.4 million. $8.3 million less than budgeted. The next largest source of revenue was the wage tax on city residents, which brought in $137.3 million, which was $1.1 million more than budgeted. In terms of other notable tax revenues, the payroll preparation tax brought in $75.8 million, which was only $100,000 more than budgeted. On the other hand, the amusement tax brought in $20.9 million, which was $2.1 million more than budgeted, and the parking tax brought in $58.5 million, which was $7 million more than budgeted, which brought both of these taxes closer to pre-pandemic levels. On the other hand, the deed transfer tax, which is higher in the city of Pittsburgh than surrounding municipalities in Allegheny County, brought in $47.9 million, which is $11.2 million less than was budgeted. The facilities usage fee, or JOC tax, which continues litigation in the state Supreme Court, brought in $1.6 million, which was $2.7 million less than was budgeted. Lastly, it's important to mention that the general fund saw $46.48 million, or about 7% of the total revenues, from the ARP Trust Fund. 2024 marked the year that all American Rescue Plan funds had to be allocated and then will be spent by 2026.
That's the revenue side, Alex, which is very informative. Now let's talk about spending. The money comes in, then the money goes out every year. So what can you tell us about 2024 spending in the city of Pittsburgh?
General fund expenditures are broken apart by department, office, or bureau, and three components make up 60% of the total expenditures, which is the Department of Finance and the Bureaus of Police and Fire. The Department of Finance spent $184 million, which was $8 million less than was budgeted. This department houses the city's debt service and pension expenditures, which account for the high departmental expense. The Police Bureau spent $118 million, which was $5.3 million under budget, which is notable considering the scrutiny on the number of uniformed officers and overtime pay, which we'll touch on later. And the Fire Bureau spent $102.6 million, or $5.4 million more than budgeted. Looking at the other departments, which spent over $20 million, three spent less than the budget amount, and two spent more. The Department of Human Resources and Civil Service spent $36.9 million, $5.2 million less than budgeted. The Bureau of Operations in the Public Works Department spent $27.2 million, or $1 million more than was budgeted. The Department of Innovation and Performance spent $27 million, or $2.5 million less than was budgeted. And lastly, the Office of Management and Budget spent $22.3 million, or about $200,000 less than was budgeted.
So, Alex, Pittsburgh ended 2024 with a surplus. They're almost halfway through the 2025 budget year. There's been some concerns raised already about a couple of different issues, which you're going to touch upon. But overall, what should this city be concerned about going into 2026's budget year?
Drawing on the presentation of the annual comprehensive financial report when speaking to reporters and the letter of transmittal, the city controller portrayed the city finances as, one news account labeled it, serious but not dire. The primary concern is revenue. First is the ongoing challenges with regards to real estate taxes born out of a declining common level ratio, which has led to declines in assessed value primarily for commercial property downtown, and this has meant retroactive refunds for overassessments and then a decline in future tax revenue. When certifying the 2025 budget revenue forecast last September, the controller noted that these challenges on the real estate revenue front, combined with wage growth and high inflation, could see the wage tax overtake property taxes as the highest source of revenue in the coming years. However, population stagnation and/or decline could negatively impact the wage tax, which would spell trouble as the city's two largest general fund revenue sources would be declining. The other main concern is related to the expiration of American Rescue Plan's funds, which I mentioned briefly earlier. The city received two big tranches from the federal government, and that money had to be allocated by the end of 2024 and then spent by 2026. Over the last 4 years, $177.9 million was transferred from the American Rescue Plan Fund to support the general fund, and so the city will need to find additional revenues or rein in expenditures to avoid having to dip into and then rapidly deplete the fund balance over the next few years. To help accomplish that, the controller recommended adopting policies to help grow the tax base and attract residents. Attracting residents who stay in the city will contribute to the city's overall revenues by paying the wage tax, real estate taxes, and deed transfer taxes, and so on. The controller has also committed to highlighting areas of concern, such as the overtime or premium pay spending in quarter one of 2025, which could go over budget by millions of dollars if it continues at the current rate. The Institute has recently recommended to focus on lowering the cost of government via a hiring freeze and looking at potential outsourcing or privatization options for government functions. This would reduce the need for what is already a burdensome tax environment. Doing so would hopefully help grow the tax base, attract residents, and would be a far more holistic solution than using more taxpayer-funded subsidies and incentives to lure private businesses.
Alex, great stuff. And as always, we encourage our listeners to visit our website, www.alleghenyinstitute.org. For Alex Sedini, this is Eric Montardi, and this has been the Allegheny Institute Report on the Lincoln Institute Radio Journal.
Pennsylvania House Democrats are seeking to expand the prevailing wage, a device that dramatically increases the cost to taxpayers of government projects. Emily Green from Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania has details on this Lincoln Radio Journal commentary.
With the start of the new legislative session, like clockwork, House Democrats are back again supporting measures to make life more expensive for you, the Pennsylvania taxpayer. The Pennsylvania House Labor and Industry Committee voted to advance House Bill 846, which seeks to expand the current PA Prevailing Wage Act. Put simply, prevailing wage is the minimum hourly wages, benefits, and overtime paid to workers on government-standardized public works projects. As state policymakers consider expanding these standards, it's important to examine the potential economic and practical drawbacks. While drafted with positive intentions, these legislative mandates unintentionally undermine the very communities they aim to support by limiting competition and driving up costs. This week, the inflation rate decreased significantly, reading at 2.3%, the lowest we've seen in the last 4 years. Given this news, Harrisburg should be making every effort to ensure that we continue to make life less expensive for our Commonwealth's residents. Instead, what we saw was a renewed call from House Democrats to make public projects more expensive, and taxpayers are footing the bill. How does expanding prevailing wage law make life more expensive? First, prevailing wage laws often inflate project costs by requiring contractors to pay artificially set wages regardless of market conditions, restricting how far taxpayer dollars can stretch, and resulting in fewer schools, roads, and public works projects that get built. These laws can also disempower small, locally owned businesses. By favoring larger, union-affiliated firms that can absorb compliance costs, prevailing wage rules reduce access for entrepreneurial contractors trying to grow from the ground up. Additionally, the regulatory burden placed on businesses is another obstacle. Small businesses must navigate layers of paperwork and wage reporting just to qualify for public work. This process diverts time and energy from hiring, training, and innovation. Finally, in many cases, the prevailing wage rates themselves are outdated or misaligned with real market conditions. Rather than reflecting local supply and demand, they are often set through hard-to-calculate, top-down processes that often distort wages and reduce flexibility. Republican Labor and Industry Committee Chair Seth Grove shared, "Pennsylvania's outdated prevailing wage law drives up the costs and adds unnecessary red tape, reducing the value taxpayers receive for their hard-earned dollars. By artificially inflating the cost of publicly funded projects by as much as 30%, this archaic law means fewer roads get repaired and new schools come with a higher price tag. Meanwhile, taxpayers are left shouldering the burden through rising income and property taxes. Rather than modernizing or repealing this costly mandate, House Democrats are doubling down on the same failed big government approach by expanding it even further. Now is not the time for Harrisburg to make life more expensive for taxpayers. After 4 years of reckless spending and record high inflation, we need to protect against policies that drive up the cost of goods and services at the expense of the taxpayer. Take action today. Tell House Democrats, stop making life more expensive, and make sure that House Bill 846 stays far away from the House calendar. Head to AmericansForProsperity.org to sign your name to a petition and send a message to your representation in Harrisburg. Again, that's AmericansForProsperity.org. This is Emily Green, State Director with Americans for Prosperity, Pennsylvania.
If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 30 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WCCS-AM and WLCY-AM in Indiana, along with WNTP-AM and WFIL-AM in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, and the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania. ¶¶